Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore the many methods of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes it might feel counterintuitive, like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, otherwise known as the Practical Alchemist. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's lovely to have you with me once again. Today's show is brought to you once more in association with NasalGuard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants. It blocks indoor and outdoor allergens, so it's great for travellers as well as people with pet allergies. More about NasalGuard later, because it actually really fits in with part of today's detoxing theme. You know, I couldn't help noticing that we've just experienced a new moon, which is all about fresh starts, discarding what doesn't work for us anymore, and moving on to new things. Now, coincidentally or not, this month I found myself compelled to have a big spring clean and a massive wardrobe clear out. Actually, I think it's probably just the start. I'm going to be going back in there and doing some more. But we talk about going on a cleanse for our physical health, but this was an environmental cleanse, which is, you know, just as important for our well-being. Too much clutter drains us energetically, so it's always good to sweep away anything that pulls us down. I'd already been clearing my space of bits and pieces, things that had belonged to my late mother, things that I'd given her over the years and that she wanted me to have back after she'd passed on. It's a lovely thought, but on reflection, I'd bought things for her, not me, and beautiful though some of those ornaments and pieces are, I don't resonate with them. More than that, some even engendered feelings within me that I really didn't want to experience. Living in the past isn't the healthiest, emotionally or spiritually. It was time, 4 years after her passing, to move on. If I didn't love it, it had to go. Then there was the wardrobe, or closet, as they say in the USA. What was I holding on to there? Well, far too much is the answer. I was shocked to realise that I'd been holding on to some clothes that I really hadn't been able to wear for nigh on a couple of decades, just because I still loved the idea of them. It was time to get real and stop living in the past. Out went the, yes, beautiful, but now too small, designer trousers, dresses and skirts. Some beautiful tops I'd bought second-hand, but were always a little too small for me. It wasn't just the good stuff either. Anything that was worn out, that has gone too. In the kitchen, I cleared out my cupboards of anything that I don't use, was broken, or was food that was just way beyond its use-by date. I don't hold with discarding food that's just a little over, but when it comes to a year or more, well, then I'm a little bit more discerning. And then there's the cleaning and tidying after clearing all that space. It really is good, and the shift in my energy has really been marked, as it always is when I have a clear-out. I call it a space detox, and it's just one way of keeping our environment clear. I always aim to use as few toxic chemicals as possible in my home and in my personal care regime. And I was reminded of the great book Go Toxic Free, Easy and Sustainable Ways to Reduce Chemical Pollution by environmental journalist Anna Terns. Anna talked to me about this a while back, and I thought it was a good time to revisit some of our chat. The book is a great guide to ditching harmful chemicals, and one section gives hints on how to do this room by room, a great way to augment our spring clean. We started with the bathroom.
I would streamline everything in your bathroom cabinet. When you run out of things, think, do I really actually need to replace that, or could I reduce the number of different items in there? And actually, you'll probably find you save money and free up a lot of space as well. It can be quite cathartic to kind of have that sort of decluttering. But it's really about joining up those dots. So thinking about what happens when something goes down the plug hole. And it's just the same as when we put something in the black bin, for example, it's not going away. There is no away. It's kind of, it's always going to have an impact. So if you're cleaning your toilet with bleach, where does that bleach go? Has it got a picture of a dead fish on the back of it, on the label? Yes. And it's telling you something. It's screaming out caution, hazard, like, yeah, if you get this in your eye, go to hospital, all of those things. Mm-hmm. And actually, we just don't need it. We don't need to disinfect our homes in the same way we would do an operating theatre, for example, in a medical environment. It's just not quite the same. So I've replaced things in my bathroom. So I use a lot of bicarbonate of soda and make a paste and kind of scrub things with that to clean, which is actually really, really effective. It's easily available. It's very cheap. It's a no-brainer, really.
Bicarb is excellent. I mean, I think every home should have a big tub of bicarbonate of soda. Absolutely. Loads of different uses for that. So what else can we do?
So in terms, I'm just having a flick through, really. One of the really fascinating subjects that I explored doing this research was menstrual products, actually. Which encompass so many different aspects of what I talk about in the book. But obviously, we're putting sanitary pads and tampons in very absorbent, sensitive parts of our body. If they are non-organic cotton, they have residues of pesticides on them, and it's going into us. Sometimes they are sold with extra antibacterial nanosilver, for example, which are these tiny, tiny particles of silver that are supposed to make it more hygienic. But actually, because they're so tiny, they're more likely to get into the cells of our body and cause problems. And there's just a lot of different things that are involved in menstrual products. And one thing I would say is it's something that for most women, we need thousands of, if we're using disposable ones, we need, I think, 11,000 over the course of our menstruating period of life. And it's quite alarming. So actually, the steps we can take are thinking about perhaps switching to reusable, so perhaps menstrual cups, which are expensive at the beginning, but they will pay off and be much cheaper in the long term. You can use them for a good 10 years and you just clean them each time. We're also organic cotton tampons, for example, without applicators, preferably, will not have those pesticide residues. They will be bleach-free, for example, chlorine bleach-free. They will just be much gentler and much kinder to your skin. There will be more thought having gone into the manufacturing process. And also thinking about not flushing all of these things down the toilet as well. So thinking about, really, there should be only four things that go down the toilet: pee, poo, paper, and periods, basically. And we really shouldn't be throwing applicators or tampons or pads or anything like that down there. So that was a really fascinating thing, because I think it's something we just often don't talk about, because there's a massive stigma associated with periods and people don't necessarily want to talk about it.
Yeah, and the same would go, I suppose, for toilet roll and things like that. Use, as far as possible, an organic or toxic-free toilet roll from sustainable resources.
Yeah, and it's the bleach side of things as well. So I get mine from a company called Who Gives a Crap? And they deliver in big batches, but it's kind of been sustainably sourced and is gentle. It hasn't got those extra added chemicals, and it's coming in paper packaging. It's not coming in that plastic. And actually, because it comes once every 3 months, I don't have to buy it in the shops, because it's
true. Yeah.
I have to remember to stock up. It's good.
Oh, we've talked about the bathroom. And so the next chapter in your book is the kitchen. Now, here's another area which is absolutely full of toxins if we really look at it closely. And don't even have to look at it closely, actually.
It is. And I would say indoor air pollution is actually a really big problem. Maybe not so much in the UK. In the global south, it's enormous because of the methods of cooking. So we're quite lucky here. But there are things we can do to reduce the number of particulates, of those tiny toxic particles that are released during cooking, for example. But also we can think about the actual food we're buying and the cookware that we're using to cook with as well. So there's lots of different aspects to this. And I did find it really interesting to research and delve into.
Yeah. And you talk about not using old nonstick pans and, you know, making sure that everything is okay with your cookware. So aluminium is another one, isn't it, that can leach.
So the best thing to do is just to kind of stick to really simple things. So ceramic cookware, glass dishes, and stainless steel as well. They can be more expensive, but I have found some really good bargains in charity shops because they do just last so long. And I would say avoid those non-stick layers as much as possible, because as soon as they do get a bit worn and a bit broken up, they can start releasing chemicals. And ultimately, once we throw them away, it's those PFAS forever chemicals, things like Teflon, they don't biodegrade, they don't go away. So even when we chuck something out, they are going to stay there unless they're incinerated at extremely high temperatures. And it's next to our food. It's just thinking about, like, what do we want to do? Things like plastic as well. There's obviously so much plastic packaging that comes with food. And the first rule of thumb is to never heat plastic. How many times do people heat, like, microwave meals, for example?
Oh, yeah.
Plastic, those plasticizer chemicals that are made to use plastic are literally leaching in. They're not made to be heated. They're leaching into the food. So it's just thinking about every action has a reaction, I suppose, doesn't it?
Yes.
And simple things like just opening the window or putting the extractor on when you're cooking. Thinking about if you've got a choice of where you're using on the hob and you've got a cooker hood, use the back rings because they're more likely to, the particulates are more likely to get taken away. I actually had an air purifier machine in my house while I was writing this book, and it was really interesting to see how it kind of went red and spiked as soon as I burnt the toast, for example.
Wow.
And it's something that I wouldn't really notice because it's just, we've got an open plan living room, kitchen downstairs. And if the kids put the toast in and we'd notice it for a few minutes and then it would be gone. But actually, even though the machine wasn't near the toaster, it would pick up on that really, really quickly. And it would take quite a while to dissipate. So it's just thinking about, really good ventilation is important. Obviously, if you live right next to a motorway, it's not as simple as just opening the window. So it's, everything's relative. It's kind of thinking what's best in your own situation, in your own scenario. But yeah, the kitchen is a hive of activity.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about the worst job ever in the kitchen, as far as I'm concerned, and that is cleaning the oven, cleaning the cooker. Now, there are so many incredibly toxic products on the market for that, which I would hate to use. What are the alternatives?
So I would say if you are going to use them, definitely don't do it when your kids are around. If you've got children, like, don't do it when there's small people around. And if you are going to use those chemicals, I would definitely put a mask on if you feel like that is essential. But again, I come back to my hero of bicarb, and I make a paste and a bit of elbow grease. Don't leave it so long between cleaning. Little and often is much better. I just kind of get in there, and some of the stuff that has been sprayed in ovens in the past is so, I can literally, when I've used it years ago.
It does. It gets your throat.
Can't you? And it's having quite an immediate effect. And I'm not particularly sensitive or allergic, and I do notice it. So I would just steer clear from things as much as possible like that. And also remember that a lot of different cleaning products in the kitchen, for example, do contain bleach, even if they're not straight bleach. So thinking about things like making your own mix of vinegar mixed with lemon juice, for example, and just kind of keeping it quite simple, ultimately. Yeah. And if you don't let everything really harden and solidify for days after you've cooked, if you kind of get it straight away, it's going to be a lot easier to scrub off.
Yeah, we've all been there, haven't we? Well, those are some kitchen tips. I'll be back with more in a few minutes, right after we take a short break now to hear these messages.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and we're talking about detoxing our homes with author Anna Terns. We were talking about kitchens before the break, and here's how we continued. The thing about the kitchen as well is, remember, we've said before, everything that you use in the kitchen tends to go down the drain at some point. So you're rinsing these cloths You're rinsing the toxins that you've cleaned the oven with. And the other thing is washing up liquids and washing powders. You know, there are really quite nice alternatives now to what we have generally seen in the past, the popular brands, which might not be quite as environmentally friendly as you'd like them to be.
And also, I think this is a really important time to mention greenwash. So there's a lot of marketing lingo that can be used on labels, for example, and with some really big brands, they might have biodegradable in massive letters on the label. And actually, it might only be certain ingredients that are biodegradable, not the entire product. Some include things like liquid polymers, which are basically liquid plastics that are used within the product. And they'll end up going down the plug hole, as you've said. So it's thinking about products that are entirely biodegradable, that are designed with that intention of being really easy to decompose and being gentle on the environment. And there are brands out there. There's refill brands as well, in terms of there's lots of really ethically minded businesses that are doing this. And also the food that we're eating as well. So the things that we are bringing into the kitchen that we're eating every day, I'm not saying we all have to be completely organic and pure and everything, but it's just remembering that actually most foods do have pesticides in them, and those are designed to be toxic, some more than others. So some might have residues on them, and some of them might have multiple residues on them. So they've all got legal limits, but we talk about this chemical cocktail, and actually there might be, say, 14 pesticides on an apple, but they'll all be individually below their maximum residue levels, their limits. But actually, if you look at them in total, that's quite a lot in one piece of fruit or in one item. And I really do think that we can all make different choices. So things that my children and I eat every day, I try my best to buy organically if I can, so that I'm just trying to minimize that impact. So as well as opting for organic whenever possible, one of the biggest things we can do is to reduce food waste.
Yeah.
Because actually, more than anything, food waste is harmful to the environment. It's got embodied emissions. Like, every single piece of food that we're eating has had energy and effort put into it to make it. So when I buy organically and I spend a little bit more on that, I am much more conscious about not wasting it and being really careful to use every part of it. So I think actually that's a really good message in total, just to kind of reduce food waste wherever you can. Because otherwise, if you're chucking a bag of salad away that hasn't been opened because it's gone out of date, all the energy and the emissions and the chemicals that were used to make that bag of salad is completely wasted.
Yeah, very good point. And we can't always buy organic, because it is more expensive. But
it's not always available either. It's not always, if you're in a rush and you've got to nip to the local shop, it's not always there. I'm not saying that everyone has to be perfect. It's just about doing what you can.
Well, none of this is about being perfect, is it? And it just
doesn't
work. It's much
better to have millions of us doing everything imperfectly than a few people doing everything perfectly, I would say.
Exactly. I absolutely agree with you. So those are some things to think about in the kitchen. Tell us about the living room.
So again, indoor air pollution comes up. Often people have open fires or wood-burning stoves, and those are releasing particulates into the home. And often also the furniture as well, which you wouldn't have thought. You'd maybe expect your sofa to be a completely passive item in your living room. But often a lot of these textiles have got chemicals, persistent chemicals like flame retardants in them, and pesticides, if it's non-organic cotton, for example, and other what we call volatile organic compounds, so VOCs, so things like formaldehyde that might be within the adhesive of the MDF or plywood furniture, for example. And one of the things I learned about was this off-gassing, which is this release of these chemicals. So especially when an item is brand new as well, these chemicals can be released into the air. And if it's not being well ventilated, we can be breathing that stuff in. And it can also accumulate in the house dust as well. So one thing I would do if you were buying new furniture, I would let it air outside of the packaging maybe if you've got a garage or even at the manufacturers and say, look, could you just take it out of the packaging and let it breathe for a few days before I have it in my home? And also buy secondhand more. Like, I'm all for going to charity shops and antique shops or wherever you go for secondhand things, because A, it's, well, it's obvious, it's a no-brainer, it's good for the environment, but they won't also have these VOCs releasing from them. And also the way I dust is now different as well. So for the book, I had my house dust tested by a scientist in Birmingham who very eloquently spoke about house dust as the soil of our indoor environment. So he could tell a lot about my home from this house dust sample, which I'd kind of hoovered the house and then and gave him a sample of the dust from the Hoover bag. And there were things like pesticides and flame retardants and PFAS chemicals in there. But one thing he said to me that was really stuck, actually, is normally you would dust the surfaces and the windowsills and all of the obvious places to clear the dust. And that's absolutely fine. One place we often forget is all of the electronics. So things like the Wi-Fi router, things like the DVD player or the back of the TV. And what he said was that when the house dust moves around, as it does in the air, and it lands on these electronic items, flame retardants can transfer into the house dust. And if that's not removed, it's then going to carry on moving around the air. If you've got pets or children playing on the ground, they might well be playing and putting their hands on the floor and then into their mouths just inadvertently. And also adults unconsciously ingest about 20 milligrams of dust every day anyway. So it's kind of in that environment. So one thing I try and do is not obsessively at all. I'm not an obsessive cleaner, but I do try and wipe down the electronic items once a week or so and just kind of clear that away. I also don't use polish at all. So I'm not using any added sprays to add anything extra in there. I'm just using a damp cloth, really, really simple, with a little bit of water and then rinsing that down the sink. So it's just tiny tweaks that can actually make a massive impact.
And talking about stuff that I've been doing for years now, buying secondhand furniture. And what I tend to do is to go onto a Freecycle page somewhere or just look on Facebook. And sometimes people are giving away furniture because they've upgraded or they've decided they want a new suite. But that is absolutely how I go about things now. I don't buy new wherever possible.
Brilliant. And often older furniture has a lot more character and...
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that we think that a clean home has to smell of something, has to smell good. But it really doesn't. A clean home, actually, in my view, should smell of nothing at all.
Exactly, exactly. And there's all this kind of lemon zest or sea spray or pine cone. And you think, where's this come from? It's not real anyway. And we're kind of, we're told we need all these plugins and these toilet cleaners and everything. And I'm totally with you. If I go into a home that has a lot of synthetic smells, I really notice it so much more these days than I did a few years ago, because it just stands out to me. Whereas at home at the moment, it doesn't smell of anything. But to me, that smells clean.
That's exactly. And air fresheners as well are quite polluting, aren't they?
They are quite polluting, and they can exacerbate things like asthma and not be great for your own body as well.
Yeah, they give me a migraine, to be honest with you. So I absolutely avoid anything like that. But we come to the bedroom now. Now, this is an important one, isn't it? The bedroom. There are loads of places where toxins can be hidden.
It is. And it's really interesting. So when people are often asked, where do you think the most toxic room in your home is? They will often say the kitchen. But actually, it can be the bedroom, because simply because we spend a third of our lives asleep on average, we're spending longer in there. So there's a few things we can do to reduce those impacts. And one thing, as we were talking about the off-gassing earlier, we all sleep on, well, most of us sleep on mattresses. Many of them are made of polyurethane, which can off-gas chemicals in the night. And really interestingly, because of our body heat, that off-gassing can increase. So because we're actually sleeping on that for eight, however many hours, if we've got the windows shut, those chemicals build up and we're breathing those in for quite a long time. So one of the biggest things I've done over the past year in terms of changes, personal changes, is to leave the bedroom window slightly ajar and to keep replacing that air. So I make sure that I really change all that air in the house every day to bring that fresh air in. And also fashion is a really big aspect of the bedroom. Obviously we've got our wardrobes and they're full of clothes. And just like we were talking about in terms of textiles with furniture and secondhand nature of things, actually everything has got a chemical footprint. Everything. So you think about a leather belt, for example, or a leather handbag. Those have probably been made using chromium, which is a really harmful, toxic process that often leaches polluted water out into the environment and harms people working in those factories, for example. You've got lots of pesticides in the non-organic cotton, synthetic materials, which are releasing microfibers all the time. So it's just thinking about, A, do I need as much? So buying less, but buying better. So a little bit like the food philosophy, and avoiding those added extras is a really important thing. So if we are buying shirts that say they are easy iron, for example, or stain resistant, they have probably had those added PFAS chemicals added to them. And one thing I noticed as well last year was my youngest son's school trousers had squares inside the legs over his knee patches with Teflon, a layer of this PFAS chemical. Not on the girls' trousers, annoyingly. I don't know why it's not equal. Mm. But obviously, boys, they think were tending to fall over more and graze the knees more and making holes in the knees of their trousers. So they were reinforcing it with these Teflon chemicals. So I make a real conscious effort to try and find ones without that, or to use hand-me-downs, to use secondhand uniform that is in perfectly good condition and doesn't have those things on. But things like waterproof coats or walking boots, all of those things, there are now more companies that are producing clothing and products without those PFAS chemicals, but you have to search for them. You have to really look for them. So it's just taking a little bit of a pause before you buy something new. Do you really need it? Is there a better version? Or could you buy it secondhand? Or could you borrow it, for example? There's other ways of doing things. So shop less is possibly the biggest message of the entire book. Like, buy less stuff and have less, and keep it streamlined. And you'll probably find you save a lot of money. You have more space in your home. You're not spending time looking at online shopping or whatever you might be doing. So yeah, you're kind of freeing up lots of other things.
Yes, exactly. The thing though that people sometimes meet resistance with in terms of clothing is going to the secondhand place, it's going to charity shops, but you can find fantastic bargains in charity shops. You're doing some good. And, you know, who cares that somebody else has worn it before you if it's in perfectly good condition?
Exactly. But you wash it anyway and it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The garden is another area where so much goes on that is so toxic. Talk us through the garden.
We just don't need all those extra chemicals. We don't, especially if we're growing food, because they are going to be going straight into the food that we're growing. But also, I'm all for creating a beautiful, messy, wildlife-friendly garden. And by doing so, you'll be encouraging the insects and the bugs and the birds that are going to kill those pests anyway. So you will have a more resilient green space. And even if you don't have a garden, even if you've just got a simple window box, for example, or a couple of pot plants, you can encourage pollinators, you can encourage biodiversity, basically. And by doing that, you will much more easily be able to deter the pests. But also there are physical ways of using your hose pipe to spray off aphids, for example, or removing the snails by hand, which, yes, it might take more time, but actually the positive impacts are going to be much more beneficial. And thinking about how your patch of land, however big or small it might be, is part of a bigger patchwork. It's part of a network, and you can create a little island for all of this wildlife, because all of their habitats are becoming so fragmented. And actually, if you had a really beautifully messy wildflower front garden, for example, or something, your neighbours might start noticing and they might go, oh, I don't necessarily want an immaculate short lawn. I'd quite like what you've got. And that could spread. So I think we've got this image of what our gardens should look like. They should be neat and tidy. They should have perfect lawns. They should be very sort of meticulously cared for. And actually, I don't agree with that. I think actually it's fine to kind of pick out some weeds that you don't want by hand, obviously, but don't waste money on the chemicals. You just don't need them. Most of the chemicals sold to kill the pests have glyphosate in them, which is this, you're kind of feeding money to the biggest agricultural chemical companies in the country, in the world. And it's just not a regenerative approach. It's not going to encourage resilience in terms of soil health, in terms of the wildlife that we want to see around us. And also, if you've got pets as well and they're going out there, you don't want your pets or your family to be exposed to these chemicals in the first place anyway. So it's not rocket science.
You touched on pets. You do talk about pets in the book and how to make sure that what you're buying for them is as toxic free as possible, either their food or even the medications that you give them. But I also noticed a page on heating our gardens. And of course, a lot of people these days have got fire pits, they've got barbecues, and those are a horrendous source of toxic particulates, shall we say.
They are. And I think people forget because it's, again, it's invisible. I mean, I don't want to be the kind of killer of all fun here. So I think it's using everything in moderation, but remembering that they are using an immense amount of energy, and bonfires and fire pits and things, they are releasing those particulates into the environment. And it is massive. If everybody's doing that, the scale of it is really, really big, and it's drifting into other people's gardens, into other people's spaces. So just a little bit of consideration, I think, goes a long way.
Environmental journalist and author Anna Turns there. And yes, let's all have much more consideration for our environment inside and out. Anna's book again is called Go Toxic Free, and you won't be surprised to learn that it's printed on sustainably sourced paper, and it's published by Michael O'Mara Books, who support environmental charities. Now it's time for another short break. I'm back with more right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the practical alchemist, fresh from my space clearing and home detoxing. Now, when we talk about going toxic free, as I was with Anna Turns earlier, it's good to remember it's as important to keep our bodies as clear of toxins as we can, as well as our homes and wider environment. That's where products like Nasal Guard are winners. A lot of research and science has gone into developing a gel that's drug-free and ticks all the right boxes. The result is something that's so safe and simple to use, but also highly effective at keeping airborne particles out of our bodies. Here's Nasal Guard Ambassador Pooja Hanagandhi, who told me just how much Nasal Guard has turned her life around.
Well, I'm a college student, so I'm actually wrapping up my journey with my college endeavors. So very exciting for me. But I will say, alongside that, it's kind of thrusted me into so many positions where I've had to be in big lecture halls and sitting, concentrating on an exam or studying in the library. And it was really like those moments in public where I would realize like how bad my nose, my, this is so gross, but like my snot. My snot, my allergy, my allergic reactions I've been getting. I mean, honestly, sometimes it would just take one or two sneezes and I would just be sniffling throughout the lectures. And it really just got to a point where I was like, sometimes I wouldn't want to go to class. Sometimes I would just wake up feeling really anxious about what I was going to be doing that day, if I were going to be around a lot of people. And I even noticed that sometimes like somebody would walk into the room and I would catch a whiff, no big deal, and then start sneezing. So clearly there was a triggering effect that would lead to me sneezing. And that's when I started branching out and asking like, okay, what are my options? Where can I go? And that's when I found Nasal Guard, lo and behold, and have been using it ever since. So.
Wow. So how long has that been? How long have you been using it?
I'd say for about a year now.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you know what's causing your reaction? Is it an allergy? Is it like people who have cats, for instance, who you stand next to, you suddenly get triggered?
Yes. Actually, it's so funny you say that because it's specifically cats for me.
A lot of people are. A lot of people really are.
That makes me feel so much better because growing up, I used to be so like ashamed of even saying that, you know, like, oh, people will be like, oh, meet my cat. And the first thing that I'd be saying would be like, oh, I'm allergic to cats. But now I can finally say, like, I can at least be around them. I mean, touching them is a different thing because it's more of like a skin. It's also like a skin. I get a skin reaction with my touch my face. But now that sneezing reaction does not happen anywhere near as much whenever I'm around cats or other animals. Dogs, I'm typically fine around. But I will say there are like certain perfumes, like little tinges in perfumes or scents here and there that, like I said, when somebody would just walk into the room, I love the smell. I can notice somebody walked into the room, but then my nose would start freaking out. I'd start sneezing all over the place and I couldn't even stop sometimes. It would be like a sneezing fit. So thankfully I found this and it really has been helping me out like immensely in those situations. Like I don't even notice it until kind of like after some time has passed where I'm like, oh, I've just been kind of hanging out, doing my work, and like nothing even happened. So,
wow, yeah. Tell me how debilitating it is in your life to have this kind of allergy.
I've definitely had a multitude of experiences when it comes to being very inconvenienced by it, to mildly inconvenienced by it. Definitely have had really good days and then have had really bad days. And that's why I really do love the product, because I feel like even on a bad day or a good day, it's like it at least provides me this sense of comfort and this standard, like, okay, you're going to be all right as long as you have this kind of vibe for me. So it's definitely a really nice aid for me to have. And it definitely, I am really happy that I found this. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. You also have found it useful in terms of your general health, have you?
Honestly, post-COVID, I had been kind of looking for some way to sanitize a little bit more effectively than just lathering on hand sanitizer or whatever that literally just dries your skin out. So this is such an amazing alternative for your face that actually provides that sense of comfort and that extra barrier of relief. It's amazing.
So obviously, hand sanitizer does have, you know, it does give people problems because it really dries out your skin. So I understand that the thing about nasal guard is that you just don't even feel you're using it.
Oh my gosh. I really wish I knew about it sooner because it's so convenient to use. I have so many ways I love to use it too, because it's kind of gotten me more into like my skincare, funny enough, because now it's like another added step in my skincare and I look forward to it so much. But obviously I do my skincare for me. I do my skincare before that. Before I apply nasal guard. So for example, I'll do like my moisturizer, maybe like a little serum for my face, and then like an eye cream, and then I'll dollop on a little like pea-sized amount of the nasal guard product onto my nostrils, and I'm good to go. And then like literally just how you mentioned, like it's so hard sometimes to like know that you put it on in a way because you just don't realize it. And I think a big part of that is because it doesn't even like, so when it dries, it's almost like you would expect it to dry and like harden over your nose. Like that does not happen. It's actually like very moisturizing for your nose. So in a way it kind of like gives me that moisturization and that better like breathing effect than really anything else I've tried before. So personally, like after this, I'm like, I can't stray away. You know, I'm a little scared to like try something else and like have my nose dry out or something. So,
I mean, from my own experience of it, it really does feel like nothing on your face. It really feels just like you've put the nicest moisturizer on. You just don't know it's there.
I agree. I think actually I've recently been trying the cool menthol flavors, which have been such a nice like breath of fresh air every now and then, like literally, because when you put on that scent, it kind of opens up your nostrils like a little like a, I don't know what it's called when your sinuses open, but it's kind of what it creates, which is so refreshing. And I've been a little bit like apprehensive to try it before because like I'm a little bit sensitive to scents, as I mentioned earlier, but thankfully it's working just fine for me and I love using it.
Yeah, well, I was just going to ask you about that because, you know, if you are sensitive to perfumes, to scents, that could be a problem, but not with nasal guard. And I don't know about you, but I have very sensitive skin and I'm very careful about what I put on my skin. So I was curious to see how nasal guard would perform. But for me, it's not given me any problems. And I'm guessing that's the same for you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Even over my makeup, it's perfect to kind of tag on before I go out anywhere. And that's usually my best time that I like to use it, usually like right before or after I apply makeup. Typically after, so like it stays on for longer and I can just kind of reapply it if I want to. But if I'm also done with taking my makeup off, sometimes I'll just like add a little bit on just because why not? But
Yeah, you're a student, and so you're probably very mindful of your pocket and how much things are costing. So, what do you think about the cost of nasal guard?
yeah, I mean that's a really great question because I mentioned before like I've been kind of facing these allergies for months, like close to a year. And again, I really didn't want to like accept that it was that bad until I got myself kind of checked out and looked at, and I realized like, okay, this is a real thing. I am allergic to a lot of stuff. And one of the main things that had been recommended to me was to search through like drugstore products and remedies that people have tried and tested to kind of figure out what works for me. And, you know, the market for allergy products is kind of bizarre. Like, there's a lot of stuff out there that you really just have to try and see what works for you. So, I have tried a few things like over-the-counter pills and other like those like little pot things that you would like clear out your nose, like a bunch of stuff to try to see what it took to like calm me down. So, and also when you think about those alternatives, a lot of those can be so expensive and you have to keep buying them again and again. What I love about nasal guard is that when you get one, like a tube, you know, you can try that out, but they have like bigger sizes and like value packs that you can get for way cheaper. And they always have like discounts and stuff, which is just like such a blessing for me that I can like hop online and just type in like a little 20% off kind of thing. So it's not only just really affordable for me, but very convenient for me to take with me and kind of just try out, give to other friends if I need to, with the way it like dispenses. It's just, yeah, a completely different way to look at allergies for sure.
Yeah, and something that works, and also it's preventative and it's not a drug.
Exactly. It's very safe. It's safe for anybody to use. And I tell people that all the time because they're like, whenever my friends are like, oh, are you sure? Like, I can just use some of this. I'm like, yeah, it's totally fine. Like, I use this all the time. You're gonna love it.
So, all in all, your experience with nasal guard has been extremely positive.
I would say so, definitely. It's something that I really can't live without. And if I couldn't, if it wasn't like, thankfully, I can take it with me everywhere. Like, it's TSA compliant. I can pop one in my bag. I literally have one in every one of like my book bags and purses. All my friends will just step into my car and like open my door and be like, what's that? And it'll just be like all the little consoles. But yeah, I can't live without it. It's perfect for me.
Well, that sounds fantastic. And yes, as you say, it's TSA compliant, so you can fly with it in your hand luggage, and nobody's going to worry about that at all. And in fact, it is suggested that it's great for air travel because, when you're sitting on an airplane or even in a train, and you have all that air just being recycled around you. It's a way of making sure that you don't take anything on board that you don't want to, isn't it?
100%. And it's so funny because I'd never even thought about that until I started using the product. And that's when I saw the versatility within this product and their product line. I mean, they have like a spray that I still have yet to use because it's like I haven't been on a flight lately. So I'm kind of like about to, I think in the next few months, I'm hoping to go travel. So around that time, I'm hoping to use their spray to kind of see how that could work for me.
Yeah, and how does the spray work?
Yeah, I believe they have two sprays. They have a nasal spray and then they have like a mask spray. So if you spray your mask with the mask spray, it should, I mean, I can't, I don't really have the product on me, but it should filter out airborne particles. And I'm assuming you can do pretty much the same thing that nasal guard would do, but for the mask.
Yeah.
But Yeah, and for the nasal spray, it's essentially the same idea as nasal guard itself, the gel, but in a spray form.
Yeah, so with the mask, it's just giving you that extra layer of protection.
Oh, yeah, that's, and which is, again, perfect for traveling. So I will be grabbing one of those on my next flight. And, you know, like a pea, all it takes is like a pea-sized amount, and it goes such a long way. Like, just a little bit will last you the whole day. So I can't stress that enough. For me, it's like, saved my days some really, really tough or, you know, stressful days. It's really saved me. So I can't be thankful, more thankful for that.
Fantastic. So there you have it. If you want to try Nasal Guard for yourself, just click on the link on the UK Health Radio homepage for worldwide delivery. And that just about brings us to the end of today's show, brought to you in association with Nasal Guard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants, as well as indoor and outdoor allergens. If you want to find out more about me, then do check out my websites, thepracticalalchemist.uk and also safehavenhealing.uk. That's where you'll find out all about my energy clearing work. You'll find all the links to my social media channels at my websites as well, and my new YouTube channel, Alternatively Speaking. For now, though, it's just time for me to say thank you for listening. Join me next time for more Practical Alchemy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.